Bhagwan Shri Rajneesh talks on the subject of Vipassana meditation. Excerpts taken from various discourses given between 1979 and 1987.
Bhagwan, I thought that meditation was a simple thing, but seeing people doing vipassana, I am losing all hope of ever becoming a successful meditator. Please give me a little encouragement. Paul, meditation is simple. Precisely because it is simple, it looks difficult. Your mind is accustomed to deal with difficult problems, and it has completely forgotten how to respond to simple things of life. The more simple a thing is, the more difficult it looks to the mind. Because the mind is very efficient in solving difficult things. It has been trained to solve difficult things. It does not know how to tackle the simple. Meditation is simple. Your mind is complex. It is not the problem that meditation is creating. The problem is coming from your mind, not from meditation. Vipassana is the most simple meditation in the world. It is through vipassana that Buddha became enlightened. And it is through vipassana many more people have become enlightened than through any other method. Vipassana is the method. Yes, there are other methods also, but they have helped only very few people. Vipassana has helped thousands. And it is really very simple. It is not like yoga. Yoga is difficult, arduous, complex. You have to torture yourself in many ways. Distort your body, contort your body, sit this way and that, torture, stand on your head. Exercises and exercises. But yoga seems to be very appealing to people. Vipassana is so simple that you don't take any note of it. In fact, coming across vipassana for the first time, one doubts whether it can be called a meditation at all. What it is? No physical exercise, no breathing exercise, a very simple phenomenon, just watching your breath coming in, going out. Finish. This is the method. Sitting silently, watching your breath coming in, going out. Not losing the track, that's all. Not that you have to change your breathing. It is not pranayama. It is not a breathing exercise that you have to take deep breaths, exhale, inhale, nothing. Let the breathing be simple as it is. Just you have to bring one new quality to it, awareness. The breath goes out, watch. The breath comes in, watch. You will become aware. The breath touching your nostrils, one point you will become aware. Either you can concentrate there, the breath comes in, you feel the touch of the breath on the nostrils, then it goes out, you feel the touch again. Remain there at the tip of the nose. Not that you have to concentrate at the tip of the nose. You have just to be alert, aware, watchful. It is not a concentration. Don't miss. Just go on remembering. In the beginning you will miss again. Then bring yourself back. If it is difficult for you, for few people it is difficult to watch it there, then they can watch in the belly. When the breath goes in, the belly goes up. When the breath goes out, the belly goes in. You go watching your belly. If you have a real good belly, it will help. Have you watched? If you see Indian statues of Buddha, those statues don't have real bellies. In fact, no belly at all. Buddha looks a perfect athlete. Chest coming out, belly in. But if you see a Japanese statue of Buddha, you will be surprised. He does not look Buddha-like at all. A big belly. So big that the chest you cannot see at all. Almost as if Buddha is pregnant. All belly. And the reason why this change happened in India, while Buddha was alive, he himself was watching on the nose. Hence the belly was not important at all. But as Vipassana moved from India to Tibet, to China, to Korea, to Burma, to Japan, slowly, people became aware that it is easier to watch in the belly than at the nose. Then Buddha statues started becoming different, bigger bellies. You can watch either at the belly or at the nose, whichever feels right for you, or whichever feels easier for you. Easier is the point. And just watching the breath, miracles happen. Paul, meditation is not difficult. It is simple. Precisely because it is simple, you are feeling the difficulty. You would like to do many things and there is nothing to do. That is the problem. Great problem it is. Because we have been taught to do things. We ask what should be done. And meditation means a state of non-doing. You have not to do anything. You have to stop doing. You have to be in a state of utter inaction. Even thinking is a kind of doing. Drop that too. Feeling is also a kind of doing. Drop that too. Doing, thinking, feeling, all gone. You simply are. That is being. And being is meditation. It is very simple. In your mother's womb, you were in the same space. In Vipassana, you will be entering again into the same space. And you will remember, you will have a deja vu. When you will enter into deep Vipassana, you will be surprised that you know it, you have known it before. You will recognize it immediately because 9 months in your mother's womb, you were in the same space, doing nothing, just being. You asked me, I thought that meditation was a simple thing, but seeing people doing Vipassana, I am losing all hope of ever becoming a successful meditator. Never think in terms of success about meditation, because that is bringing your achieving mind in it, the egoistic mind in it. Then meditation becomes your ego trip. Don't think in terms of success or failure. Those terms are not applicable in the world of meditation. Forget all about that. Those are mind terms. They are comparative. And that's the problem. You must be watching others succeeding, reaching, ecstatic. And you will be feeling very low. You will be feeling silly, sitting and looking at your watch, your breath, watching your breath. You must be looking very silly and nothing is happening. Nothing is happening because you are too much expecting something to happen. And in the beginning, every new process looks difficult. One has to learn the taste of it. A lady's husband was a souse, yet she had never in her life tasted alcohol. "Here, you souse, give me that bottle. I want to taste whatever it is that has made you the bum you are." Taking the bottle of cheap whiskey, she took a good gulp of it. "Ugh, glump, breech, fui, brit, fit," she gasped. "That's the most vile tasting liquid I have ever had the misfortune to let pass my lips. It tastes terrible." "You see," said the old man, "and all these years you thought I was having a good time." "Just wait a little, pal. Just a little patience. In the beginning, everything looks difficult, even the simplest thing. And don't be in a hurry. That is one of the problems with the Western mind, hurry. People want everything immediately. They think in terms of instant coffee, instant meditation, instant enlightenment. A city slicker had just inherited a farm full of cows and, being a shrewd operator, decided to increase his herd right away. Accordingly, he imported three of the finest bulls in the area and locked them in the barn overnight with the cows. The next morning, he called the owner of the bulls to complain. The stud man laughed. "What do you expect?" he asked. "Did you think you would find calves the next day?" "Maybe not," retorted the city slicker. "But I sure did expect to see a few smiling faces on those cows." No, not even that is going to happen soon. Just sitting one day in vipassana, you will not come smiling out of it. You will come utterly tired. Tired because you were told not to do anything. Tired because you have never been in such a silly thing ever before, not doing anything. You are a doer. If you had chopped wood the whole day, you would not have been so tired. But sitting silently doing nothing, just watching your silly breath, going in, coming out, many times the idea arises, what I am doing here? And the time will look very, very long. Because time is relative. The time will become very long. One day's meditation will look as if years and years have passed. And what happened is not the sun going to set today. When it is going to finish? If you are in a hurry, if you are in a haste, you will never know the taste of meditation. The taste of meditation needs great patience, infinite patience. Meditation is simple, but you have become so complex that to relax it will take time. It is not the meditation that is taking time. Let me remind you again, it is your complex mind. It has to be brought down to a rest, to a relaxed state. That takes time. And don't think in terms of success and failure. Enjoy. Don't be too much goal-oriented. Enjoy the sheer silence of watching your breath coming in, going out. And soon you will have a beauty, a new experience of beauty and beatitude. Soon you will see that one need not go anywhere to be blissful. One can sit silently, be alone, and be blissful. Nothing else is needed. Just the pulsation of life is enough. If you can pulsate with it, it becomes a deep inner dance. Meditation is a dance of your energy. And breath is the key. Buddha brings a totally new vision of meditation to the world. Before Buddha, meditation was something that you had to do once or twice a day. 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And that was all. Buddha gave a totally new interpretation to the whole process of meditation. He said, this kind of meditation that you do 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening, you may do 5 times or 4 times a day, is not of much value. Meditation cannot be something that you can do apart from life, just for 1 hour or 15 minutes. Meditation has to become something synonymous with your life. It has to be like breathing. You cannot breathe 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening. Otherwise the evening will never come. It has to be something like breathing. Even while you are asleep, the breathing continues. You may fall in a coma, but the breathing continues. Buddha says meditation should become such a constant phenomenon. Only then it can transform you. And he evolved a new technique of meditation. His greatest contribution to the world is vipassana. No other teacher has given such a great gift to the world. Jesus is beautiful. Mahavira is beautiful. Lao Tzu is beautiful. Zarathustra is beautiful. But their contribution compared to Buddha is nothing. Even if they are all put together, then too, Buddha's contribution is greater. Because he gave such a scientific method. Simple, yet so penetrating, that once you are in tune with it, it becomes a constant factor in your life. Then you need not do it. You have to do it only in the beginning. Once you have learned the knack of it, it remains with you. You need not do it. Then whatsoever you are doing, it is there. It becomes a backdrop to your life, a background to your life. You are walking, but you walk meditatively. You are eating, but you eat meditatively. You are sleeping, but you sleep meditatively. Remember, even the quality of sleep of a meditator is totally different from the quality of the sleep of a non-meditator. Everything becomes different because a new factor has entered which changes the whole gestalt. Vipassana simply means watching your breath. Looking at your breath. It is not like yoga pranayam. It is not changing your breath to a certain rhythm, deep breathing, fast breathing. No, it does not change your breathing at all. It has nothing to do with the breathing. Breathing has to be only used as a device to watch. Because it is a constant phenomenon in you. You can simply watch it. And it is the most subtle phenomenon. If you can watch your breath, then it will be easy for you to watch your thoughts. One thing immensely great that Buddha contributed is the relationship between breath and thought. He was the first man in the whole history of humanity who made it absolutely clear that breathing and thinking are deeply related. Breathing is the bodily part of thinking, and thinking is the psychological part of breathing. They are not separate. They are two aspects of the same coin. He is the first man who talks of body-mind as one unity. He talks for the first time about man as a psychosomatic phenomenon. He does not talk about body and mind. He talks about body-mind. They are not two, hence no end is needed to join them. They are already one, body-mind. Not even a hyphen is needed. Body-mind is one phenomenon. And each body process has its counterpart in your psychology and vice versa. You can watch it, you can try an experiment. Just stop your breathing for a moment and you will be surprised. The moment you stop your breathing, your thinking stops. Or you can watch another thing. Whenever your thinking is going too fast, your breathing changes. For example, if you are full of sexual lust and your thinking is going too hot, your breathing will be different. It will not be rhythmic. It will lose its rhythm. It will be more chaotic. It will be unrhythmic. When you are angry, your breathing changes because your thinking has changed. When you are loving, your breathing changes because your thinking has changed. When you are peaceful, at ease, at home, relaxed, your breathing is different. When you are restless, worried, in turmoil, in anguish, your breathing is different. Just by watching your breath, you can know what kind of state is happening in your mind. Meditators come across a point when the mind really completely ceases, breathing also ceases. And then great fear arises. Don't be afraid. Many meditators have reported to me that we became very much afraid, very much frightened, because suddenly we became aware that the breathing has stopped. Naturally, one thinks that when breathing stops, death is close by. It is only a question of moments. You are dying. Breathing stops in death. Breathing also stops in deep meditation. Hence, deep meditation and death have one thing similar. In both, the breathing stops. Therefore, if a man knows meditation, he has also known death. That's why the meditator becomes free of the fear of death. He knows breathing can stop, and still he is. Breathing is not life. Life is far bigger a phenomenon. Breathing is only a connection with the body. The connection can be cut. That does not mean that life has ended. Life is still there. Life does not end just by the disappearance of breathing. Buddha says, watch your breathing. Leave it normal as it is. Sitting silently, watch your breath. You need not breathe deep. You don't change your breathing. You simply watch as it is. But you will be surprised by one thing. The moment you start watching, it changes. Because even the fact of watching is a change. And the breathing is no more the same. Slight changes in your consciousness immediately affect your breathing. You will be able to see it. Whenever you will watch, you will see your breathing has become a little deeper. But if it becomes on its own accord, it is okay. You are not to do it by your will. Watching your breath is slowly, slowly, you will be surprised that as your breath becomes calm and quiet, your mind also becomes calm and quiet. And watching the breath will make you capable of watching the mind. That is just the beginning. The first part of meditation, the physical part, and the second part is the psychological part. Then you can watch more subtle things in your mind, thoughts, desires, memories. And as you go deeper into watchfulness, a miracle starts happening. As you become watchful, less and less traffic happens in the mind. More and more quiet, silence, more and more silent spaces, more and more gaps and intervals. Moments pass and you don't come across a single thought. Slowly, slowly, minutes pass, hours pass, and there is a certain arithmetic in it. If you can remain for 48 minutes absolutely empty, that very day you will become enlightened. That very moment you will become enlightened. But it is not a question of your effort. Don't go on looking at the watch. Because each time you look, a thought has come. You have to again count from the very beginning. You are back to the zero. There is no need for you to watch. But this has been the experience in the East of all great meditators. That 48 minutes seems to be the ultimate point. If this much gap is possible, if for this much gap thinking stops and you remain alert with no thought crossing your mind, you are capable to receive God in. You have become the host, and the guest immediately comes. In the East, it has been found, and found rightly, that the lotus posture, the way you must have seen the statues of Buddha, that is called the lotus posture. It has been a discovery of thousands of years that that is the most relaxed state of the body. But for Westerners who are not accustomed to sit on the ground, lotus posture is a nightmare. So avoid it. Because it takes almost 6 months to learn the lotus posture. It is not necessary. If you are accustomed to sit on a chair, you can find a way, a posture, a chair made in a certain way that helps your body to relax all its tensions. It does not matter whether you are sitting in the chair or in the lotus posture or lying down on the bed. Sitting is preferable because it will prevent you falling to sleep. Lotus posture was chosen for many reasons. If one can manage it without torturing himself,
then it is the best. But it is not a necessity. It is certainly the best situation in which you can enter into watchfulness. The legs are crossed, the hands are crossed, the spine is straight. It gives many significant supports to be watchful. First, in this position, gravitation has the least effect on the body. Because your spine is straight, so the gravitation can only affect a very small portion. When you are lying down, gravitation affects your whole body. That's why for sleep, lying down is the best posture. Gravitation pulls the whole body. And because of its pull, the body loses all tensions. Secondly, when you are lying down, if the purpose is to sleep, then you should use a pillow. Because the less blood reaches to your mind, the less the mind will be active. The less blood reaches to the mind, more possibility to fall asleep. In a lotus posture, is a great combination. It has the least effect of gravitation. And because the spine is straight, the least amount of blood reaches to the mind. So mind cannot function. And in that posture, you cannot fall asleep easily. And if you have learned the posture from your very birth, it becomes so natural. And the crossing of the legs, crossing of the hands, has a significance. Your body energy moves into a circle. The circle is not broken in a lotus posture anywhere. Your both hands, this hand gives the energy to the other hand. Your one feet gives the energy to the another feet. And the energy goes on moving in a circle. You become a circle of your bioenergy. So many things are of much help. Your energy is not being released, so you don't get tired. Your blood is reaching in the least amount, so mind does not function too much. You are sitting in such a position, your legs are locked, your hands are locked, and your spine is straight. Sleep is difficult. These are just supports. They are not essential. It is not that one who cannot sit in a lotus posture cannot meditate. Meditation will be a little difficult, but lotus posture is only helpful, not absolutely needed. And for the people from colder countries, where sitting on the ground is not possible, their bodies for centuries, their parents and their parents' parents, from Adam and Eve. Have you seen any picture of Adam and Eve sitting in lotus posture? In fact, it would have been very good for them, because sitting in lotus posture, they could sit naked and yet nobody will be very much aware of their nakedness. That's how the Jaina monks sit, always in lotus posture. You cannot see their genitals. Their legs are crossed, their hands are crossed. This functions almost as a protection of their nakedness. But if people for centuries have never sit, then it is unnecessarily creating trouble. Your body structure has taken a certain mode. It is better to follow the body and its wisdom. Use a chair. The whole thing is you should be comfortable, so that the body does not draw your attention. That's why tension has to be avoided, because if you have a headache, then it will be difficult to meditate. Again and again your attention will go to the headache. If your leg is hurting, or if there is any slight tension anywhere in the body, it immediately alarms you. It is natural and it is part of the body's wisdom. If it does not alarm you, then there is danger. A snake may be biting you and you may go on sitting. Your clothes may catch fire. Your body may be burning, and you may not be aware of it. So body immediately alarms the mind wherever there is any trouble. That's the reason to create a relaxed position in which body need not alarm you, because every alarm will be a disturbance in your meditation. Pali is a language of the simple, in a way innocent and ignorant. People, vipassana is their word. In Sanskrit, it has its parallel, of which the public has changed according to their convenience. In Sanskrit, it is vipassyana. That is a little difficult. But in Pali, it is simply vipassana. The meaning is the same. The meaning is, the literal meaning of the word is to look. And the metaphorical meaning is to watch, to witness. Gautam Buddha has chosen a meditation which can be called the essential meditation. All other meditations are different forms of witnessing. But witnessing is present in every kind of meditation as an essential part. It cannot be avoided. Buddha has deleted everything else and kept only the essential part to witness. There are three steps of witnessing. Buddha is a very scientific thinker. He begins with the body, because that is the easiest to witness. It is easy to witness my hand moving, my hand being raised. I can witness myself walking on the road. I can witness each step as I walk. I can witness when I am eating my food. So the first step in vipassana is witnessing the actions of the body, which is the simplest. And any scientific method will always begin from the simplest. And while witnessing the body, you will be amazed with new experiences. When you move your hand with witnessing, watchfulness, alertness, consciousness, there is a certain grace you will feel, and a certain silence inside the hand. You can do the movement without witnessing. It will be quicker. But it will lose the grace. The Buddha used to walk so slowly. That many times he was asked, why is walking so slowly? And he has said that this is part of my meditation, always to bark as if you are walking in winter into a cold stream slowly. Alert, because the stream is very cold. Aware, because the current is very strong. Witnessing each of your steps, because you can slip on the stones in the stream. The method remains the same, only objects change with each step. The second step is the mind. Now you move in a little more subtler world. Watch your thoughts. And if you have been able and successful in watching your body, there is not going to be any difficulty. Thoughts are subtle waves, electronic waves, radio waves, but they are as material as your body. They are not visible, just like the air is not visible. But the air is as much material as the stones. So are your thoughts. Material, but invisible. That is the second step, the middle step. You are moving towards invisibility, but still it is material. Watch your thoughts. The only condition is, don't judge. Don't judge, because the moment you start judging, you will forget watching. There is no antagonism against judging. The reason why it is prohibited is that the moment you start judging that this is a good thought, that much space you were not witnessing. You started thinking. You became involved. You could not remain aloof and standing by the side of the road and just see the traffic. Don't become a participant, either by appraising, valuing, condemning. No attitude should be taken about what is passing in your mind. You should watch them just as if clouds are passing in the sky. You don't make judgments about them that this black cloud is very evil. This white cloud looks like a sage. Clouds are clouds. They are neither evil nor good. So are thoughts. Just a small wavelength passing through your mind. Watch without any judgment. And you are again for a greater surprise, as your watching will become settled, thoughts will be coming less and less. The proportion is exactly the same. If you are 50% settled in your witnessing, then 50% of your thoughts will disappear. You are 60% settled in your witnessing, then only 40% thoughts will be there. When you are 99% pure a witness, there will be only once in a while a lonely thought, 1%. Passing on the road, otherwise the traffic is gone. That rush hour traffic is no more there. When you are 100% non-judgmental, just a witness, it means you have become just a mirror, because the mirror never makes any judgment. An ugly woman looks into it, the mirror has no judgment. A beautiful woman looks into it, the mirror makes no difference. Nobody looks into it, the mirror is as pure as when somebody is being reflected in it. Neither the reflection stirs it, nor no reflection. Witnessing becomes a mirror. This is a great achievement in meditation. You have moved half the way. And this was the hardest way. Because now you know the secret, and the same secret has to be applied on different objects. From thoughts, you have to move to more subtler experiences, emotions, feelings, moods, from mind to the heart. With the same condition, no judgment, just witnessing. And the surprise will be that the most of your emotions, feelings and moods which possess you, when you are feeling sad, you become really sad. You are possessed by sadness. When you are feeling angry, it is not something partial. You become full of anger. Every fiber of your being is throbbing with anger. Watching the heart, the experience will be that now nothing possesses you. Sadness comes and goes. You don't become sad. Happiness comes and goes. You don't become happy either. Whatever moves in the deep layers of your
heart does not affect you at all. For the first time, you taste something of mastery. You are no more a slave to be pushed and pulled this way and that way. Any emotion, any feeling, anybody can disturb you. For any trivia, when you become a witness of the third step, you will become for the first time a master. Nothing disturbs you. Nothing overpowers you. Everything remains far away, deep below, and you are on a hilltop. These are the three steps of vipassana. Vipassana has many kinds of methods. This is only one method. Because Buddhism spread all over Eastern Asia, the Far East, Vipassana has a different structure in Japan. It is watching the belly as you breathe in and out. That's why the Japanese statues of Buddha have big bellies. No Indian statue of Buddha will have a big belly. That is unathletic. Does not look beautiful. But the Japanese Buddha has to have it. Because the whole method of vipassana is to practice the belly coming up, not the chest. Chest remains silent, unmoving, only the belly goes up as you breathe in, and belly goes in as you breathe out. Watching it is a single step vipassana prevalent in Japan. Watching the same breathing but not at the belly point but at the nose point. When you breathe in, the air touches your nostrils, be aware of it. And when the hot air leaves out, be watchful. First step. And the second step, when you breathe in, there is a gap before the breath returns back. Just a rest period, few seconds. Watch those few seconds when the breath is not moving. If you become capable of watching those moments, you will be able to watch them outside also. When the breath goes out, before it goes in, there is a small interval, the same interval as inside. Watch that too. Just be aware of it. Two step in Ceylon. In Tibet, they have a different way. In Korea, another way. In China, another way. But the essential point is to be a witness. And my feeling is that what I have described as three steps is the most easy, most simple. Everybody can do it. It needs no scholarship, no austerity, no great understanding, and after these three steps comes the real experience. These three steps take you to the door of the temple, which is open. When you have become perfectly watchful of your body, mind and heart, then you cannot do anything more. Then you have to wait. When the perfection will be complete on these three steps, the fourth step happens on its own accord as a reward. It is a quantum leap from the heart to the being, to the very center of your existence. You cannot do it. It happens, that you have to remember. Don't try to do it, because if you try to do it, your failure is absolutely certain. It is a happening. You prepare three steps, the fourth step is a reward from existence itself. It is a quantum leap. Suddenly, your life force, your witnessing, enters into the very center of your being. You have come home. You can call it self-realization, you can call it enlightenment, you can call it ultimate liberation. But there is nothing more than that. You have come to the very end in your search, and you have found the very truth of existence and the great ecstasy that it brings, as is said by and around itself. The Jew and the Irishman are arguing about sex. The Irishman says that according to his priest, sex is work and solely for the purpose of procreation.
No, says the Jew. My rabbi says sex is pleasure. If it was work, we would let the iris do it. Meditation is not work. Meditation is purest blissfulness. As you go deeper, you come across more and more beautiful spaces, more and more luminous spots. They are your treasure. Deeper and deeper silences, which are not only absence of noise, but presence of a soundless sound, which are musical, alive and dancing. As you reach to the ultimate point of your being, the center of the cyclone, you have found God, not as a person, but as light, as consciousness, as truth, as beauty, as all that man has been dreaming for centuries. And those dreamt treasures are hidden within himself. And it is not a troublesome, torturous, ascetic practice. It is a very pleasant, musical, poetic, and it goes on becoming more and more of a sheer joy. It is not work, it is prayer. The only prayer I know of. Because to me, prayer means when you have achieved your being, you feel it. Tremendous gratitude towards existence. That gratitude is the only real, authentic prayer. All other prayers are fake, pseudo, man-manufactured. This gratitude will arise within you just like a fragrance arising out of roses. It is said, the day Gautam Buddha died, a man came running. Buddha had asked his disciples that this is my last meeting with you in the body. I am going to leave the body. Before I leave the body, if you have any more questions left. He has been answering for 42 years. If anything is still left in somebody's mind, ask it. Otherwise, I won't be here anymore. The disciples were crying, weeping. What you can ask him, 42 years he has been answering even those questions which you have not asked. He has been answering questions which you have wrongly asked, but he has answered rightly. He was not only answering you, he was also creating questions for you. In 42 years, he has done everything that was possible. Now, what to ask at the last moment? They said, no, just we are grateful. He closed his eyes. He moved the first step inwards, that is, he moved away from the body to the mind. Second step, he moved from the mind to the heart. Third step, he was just going to take from heart to the feeling of emptiness, asmita. It cannot be called I. It is far more refined. Just emptiness. And then the last jump into nothingness. While he was just moving in, the man came running. He said, but I have a question. The disciples said, now don't disturb him. Where you have been? From your village he has passed at least 30 times. He said, I know. But sometimes there was so much crowd of customers in my shop. Sometimes I was engaged in my son's marriage. Sometimes my wife was sick, and so on and so forth. I always thought, next time when he comes, I will go. Just now I heard that he's leaving the world. What about my question? The people said that you seem to be an idiot. 30 times he passed, and 30 times you missed, and now when he's has just taken leave of us. Now it cannot be done. But Buddha came back. He opened his eyes. He said, no. Let him ask him. Let him be answered. Because I don't want in the history to be known for the coming generations that a Buddha was alive and yet somebody returned from his door empty-handed. Let me do my part. If he is ready, and I can see he is ready. My death has been a shock to him and has made him ready. I am happy that even my death has helped someone to be ready to listen. He answered his question. The question was not philosophical, theological, intellectual. The question was really authentic, sincerely spiritual. But that man for so many years was missing. Just the idea that tomorrow, day after tomorrow, any time Buddha comes and goes, I can go and meet and ask. He had asked, this was the last question to Buddha, that how I can be in a position that whether you are in the body or not, your presence will remain available to me. What can I do? He had asked a real religious question. He is asking, what can I do so that your presence remains available to me? This time I have missed when you were in the body, but I don't want to miss forever. Buddha gave him the instructions for meditation, vipassana, how to be aware of your breathing, how to be aware, silently watchful of the breath going out, coming in, going out, coming in. So slowly, slowly, you can be separate from your breathing. The moment you are separate from your breathing, my presence will be available. Because you are separate from your body just as I am separate from my body. If a disciple is ready, even a dead master can be alive. If the disciple is not ready, then even a living master cannot do anything. It all depends on the disciple.